Support for Impact Cincinnati comes from Murray and Robin Sinclair.
Good morning. This is Impact Cincinnati on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. The presidential election is less than 2 months away, and to quote an old state slogan, Ohio seems to be the heart of it all. Candidates are campaigning here weekly. Pollsters continue to question Ohio voters, and it's nearly impossible to listen to a national story about the election without hearing Ohio mentioned. This morning, we'll talk about Ohio's role in the presidential election, and we'll try to talk about other races and issues facing voters. Joining me are Xavier University Assistant Director for Philosophy, Politics, and the Public Honors, Jean Beaupre, UC Professor and Co-Director of the Institute for Policy Research, Eric Rademacher, and WVXU's political reporter, Howard Wilkinson. You can join in the conversation. Email your questions to impact@wvxu.org or post them on our Facebook page. Good morning.
Good morning.
Certainly glad to have you all here. Let's just start right into all these Ohio visits. We had Vice Presidential Candidate Paul Ryan here last night. Joe Biden was in the state this week. Mitt Romney was in Mansfield earlier this week. He's coming back to the northeastern part of Ohio tomorrow. President Obama will be here on Monday. When are they just going to move in?
Well, I mean, it goes even further than that. I mean, I saw on Facebook the other day, a great picture of Tag Romney, his oldest son, standing next to the prize-winning heifer at the Highland County Fair.
I didn't know heifers could vote.
And it was a great picture. There were all these people standing around, and Tag Romney standing around with a cow at the Highland County Fair.
So
they're going to establish a residency here. They'll be able to vote.
Why are they doing it?
Well, because it is. I mean, we really are the center of it all. I think this is a key state that Mitt Romney has to win. Barack Obama, not so much so. But I was at the conventions, both in Tampa and Charlotte, and it was nothing but Ohio, Ohio, Ohio all the time, from speakers on the podium, from visitors to the delegation breakfast. It's clear that this is where the focus is going to be, and this is where the money is going to be spent.
I'd say two things about that. One is there are other swing states. This is a swing state that has a lot of, relative to the other states, a lot of electoral votes. You know, that's probably one thing. And the other thing, I think this feeds on itself. Once the media has decided this is a key state,
right,
it becomes a key state. And, you know, it's, as you point out, Marianne, it's universal. Everybody's talking about it. So, you know, we get that boost. And then the last thing is just the people argue that we are a microcosm of the country, and I think there's something to be said for that. But in the heat of battle, that's probably the least important.
Eric?
Well, you know, I think one of the things that Ohioans don't realize, people in the greater Cincinnati region don't realize, is that what Ohioans see is atypical for what voters in the rest of the country are seeing. There are many states who are not seeing any candidate appearances, very few commercials, might get something in the mail. And an evolution over the last couple of decades has been that there has been a real narrowing in the way the presidential election campaigns are run, where it's a smaller and smaller and increasingly smaller selection of states. To Howard's point, I think you also see that both campaigns have laid out a series of states that they must win in order to win the presidency. And by all accounts right now, when you look at those different paths that the candidates have, there are more paths for Barack Obama to win the presidency than there are for Mitt Romney. Given that, Ohio is absolutely essential for the Romney campaign. They must win Ohio. I don't think there's any question that they must win Ohio to win the presidency.
That's exactly right. And, I mean, historically, no Republican president has been elected without winning Ohio. Eric's right. This thing is being played out in about 10 to 12 different states, and everybody else is out of the picture because they know what's going to happen in those states. States like Kentucky. Kentucky is going to go for Mitt Romney. Indiana will probably go back into the red column. this year. So it's being played out in these 10 to 12 states, and Ohio is at the center of it.
Now, some and we've had some concern or questions about this in the past, and when we say things like Kentucky's going to go to Romney, and folks have written to us and said, aren't you disenfranchising voters? Aren't you telling them not to even go to the polls?
No, we're not telling them that. We're looking at the history. And we're looking at demographics, and we're looking at what the polling, you know, in Kentucky says. And even the Democrats, even Democratic Party leaders in Kentucky will tell you that.
Well, sure. And these things change over time, too. It's not as if right. the same playbook in Ohio even is as relevant today as it was 5 years ago, let alone 10 years ago. It used to be the case that Northeast Ohio was written off as Democratic, and Southwest Ohio was written off as Republican. Now we've seen Hamilton County especially become more competitive in Southwest Ohio, and we see around the counties around Hamilton County in Ohio anyway have become more conservative, more Republican. That's why you're seeing a mix of Democratic and Republican appearances, because we're really in a period now for the first time in a long time where both parties at the presidential level see an opportunity for big votes in this region of the state. It used to be that we only looked at it as potential for how much can the Republicans squeeze out of Southwest Ohio. Mm-hmm. So these things, there are trends that we see over time, but that's not to say these things don't change, and there's not. It's also not to say that there's those changes are built in voter behavior and voters showing up at the polls.
Now, there are an awful lot of people that already know who they're going to vote for. And if they plan to vote for Mitt Romney, Barack Obama could come to this state 100 times in the next 2 weeks, and they're not going to change their mind, and vice versa. So how many undecideds are there that these folks are talking to?
That's a good question, all three of us, I guess, can speak to that. But the other thing that I would say about it is you have to pull your voters. And I think Obama has a bigger challenge doing that.
What do you mean, pull your voters?
He may have a base vote that if those people show up, no doubt they'll vote for him. The question is the first if. Will they show up? And so he comes in on Monday. He energizes those volunteers that are working for him and doing the ground game here, which, you know, I would argue the ground game, I know this is kind of a cliche-ish, but I think the air wars will cancel each other out, except that, that Romney has more money probably. And so it's that ground game. And so you energize your volunteers. What are your volunteers doing? They're making contact, as personal contact as possible, which is key in a campaign, to those people who that are either their persuadables or that are their folks, but they got to get them out on election day.
Last week in Charlotte, Jim Messina, the campaign manager for the Obama campaign, came to the Ohio delegation at their breakfast, and he said, within a couple of weeks, people are going to take their TV sets and just throw them out the window as far as they can. And then it's going to be down to what Gene talks about, voter contact, one-on-one, particularly with people in your own community, you know, where you talk to people, you call them, you knock on their doors. It is going to be a ground game because, in fact, it could be close enough that every vote does count. And both campaigns are running that kind of an operation.
Eric, what are you seeing out in the field as you're doing polling? Are there a lot of undecided people?
I think the undecided level right now is about what we typically see. It's probably in the neighborhood of about 6 to 10%. The real question beyond those undecideds, though, is what Gene and Howard have mentioned. There are folks out there who have not completely made up their mind at this point. They're leaning one way or the other, but they're not sure. Then you get up, if you add those into the undecided, you probably get somewhere about 12 to 15%. And then there is the question of who turns out versus who doesn't. And so much of this in the final month or so of the campaign is going to be about guaranteeing getting voters to the polls. That in some ways, by the time we get to Election Day, that will dwarf the concern over who's left and undecided. It really will move from trying to convert and attract mode to simply how many people can we pick up in what way and deliver to the polls.
I don't know what this means, but the Obama campaign has at this point 104 offices running around the state of Ohio, and not just in the big cities and not just in the areas where you think they would be, but in Gallipolis, Ohio, and Chillicothe, Ohio, and Troy, Ohio. They are running an 88-county strategy. They don't expect to win all of those smaller counties, but they do hope to be able to cut into the Republican margin and do well enough in large urban areas to be able to eke out the kind of victory that, that Barack Obama did in Ohio 4 years ago, where he had 51.5% of the vote.
The other thing I would argue that makes the ground game not just more important but more valuable is the sophistication of targeting that occurs in both sides of the aisle. Both campaigns do this. I mean, they might know what I had for breakfast this morning. And you know, if you can target that well, then it makes that hit to that person much more valuable and possible. If you had to do everybody, you couldn't do it. So how do you target down to those people that really make a difference? And frankly, that targeting doesn't come from here. It comes from, you know, the basement in a building somewhere in D.C. or Chicago or wherever it is.
Just so they aren't putting hidden cameras in your house to check on your
No, but they know what buttons to push on people. They know what kind of organizations they belong to. They know what kind of magazines they read. They know what, you know, they know about you, and they target you. And if they don't think they can persuade you, you're not going to hear from them.
Right.
One of the things you all bring up is the importance of getting people out to the polls to vote. In Ohio, there's a whole lot of talk about when you can actually do that. Can you do it the last 3 or 4 days before Election Day down at the Board of Elections? Can you vote into the evening? Howard, can you fill us in just on what the rules and where things stand right now with the latest court case that John Houston's been going through, the Secretary of State, and how likely you think it is people will be able to vote on those few days before Election Day?
Well, I mean, as things stand now, the federal court up in Northern District of Ohio has said, yes, there can be voting on those 3 days.
Which is
Saturday, Sunday, and Monday before the election. And, of course, there's still an appeals process that can be done, but right at this moment, the courts are saying people should be able to vote on those 3 days.
I mean, the other thing I think is the whole applying for absentee ballots. And,
right.
You know, the Secretary of State sent out 4 million point something or other. And that's another part. It feeds into both what you ask and what we were talking about before. People apply for an absentee ballot, and they go on a list that's a public list. There's another way that people are targeted. I mean, they are likely voters because they actually asked for a ballot.
We should point out that there was some concern even about that because
right.
some counties were sending those out if they had the money.
Right.
Other counties weren't, and finally the Secretary of State said, I'm just sending them to everybody.
Right,
right.
To provide an equal opportunity for every voter was the logic.
But Gene's right. The campaigns then every day will go to the boards of elections in all 88 counties and find out who has applied.
So that's all public record.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. In fact, you don't even have to go to the board anymore.
Oh, no.
You just dial it up on your computer.
That's right.
It's amazing.
But when you talk about disenfranchising voters, I really feel that we're sort of in a period now of real difficulty from a systemic level, a process level, where we have so many voters or potential voters that are confused, mm-hmm. not sure about what the rules are, not sure what they can do, what they can't do, not sure whether they need to bring particular ID or not, and even confusion about where they vote. So when we talk sometimes about whether campaigns and candidates are trying to encourage and discourage the vote, we forget a little bit about the impact that the system itself can have on that. And mm-hmm. I think the last couple of cycles, there's been a lot of discouraging signals to voters, whether it be questions about how we count and whether we count fairly and accurately, to rules that are obviously intended to uphold the law in a way we can all agree on, but then also try to encourage voting. I'm not so sure mm-hmm. that they haven't ended up discouraging voting a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. You know, in the case of the Obama campaign, I know they're working very hard to educate people who are in their base to tell them, you know, here's what you need to do, here's when you need to do it, and try to make it clear to them, you know, how this process works.
This is Impact Cincinnati on 91.7 WVXU. We're talking today about the presidential election along with the general election coming up in November. If you have a question or a comment, we'd like to hear from you. Get it in quickly, though, because we have quite a list going already. Send it to impact@wvxu.org or post it on our Facebook page.
Support for WVXU is provided by Skanska, a construction manager dedicated to providing sustainable and innovative construction solutions for clients in the Cincinnati area. More information is available at usa.skanska.com. That's usa.skanska.com. Support comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company offering self-funded employers an opportunity to control healthcare costs with plans tailored to their workforces. UMR assisting over 1,000 businesses and over 2 million plan members endeavoring to live financially and physically healthier lives. Details at umr.com.
Support comes from Sibley, Shillitoe & Dyer, a law firm for businesses and business people, providing legal services in southwestern Ohio and throughout the United States. Now celebrating 25 years, the firm is proud to support WVXU as part of its tradition of commitment to the community. Sibley, Shillitoe & Dyer, where it's our business to know yours. Information online at ssdlaw.com.
This is Impact Cincinnati on 91.7 WVXU. We're talking about the upcoming November election. My guest, Xavier University Assistant Director for Philosophy, Politics, and the Public Honors, Jean Beaupre, UC Professor and Co-Director of the Institute for Policy Research, Eric Rademacher, and WVXU's political reporter, Howard Wilkinson. Again, if you have a question, email it to impact@wvxu.org or post it on our Facebook page. And we have a couple of questions I'd like to get to. Now, this is from Joshua, who says, it's nearly impossible to listen to a news story about the presidential election and hear the name of any candidate other than Obama and Romney. What can you tell voters like me who aren't satisfied with those options about their choices on Election Day? It's frustrating that we're always left to do our own research. And that's from Joshua.
Hmm. Well, that is, I mean, that is a problem. I mean, you've got, you know, other, obviously you've got other minor party candidates who are going to be on the ballot. Romney and Obama are the ones who, practically speaking, one of them is going to be elected president, and they have the money, and they have the ability to get their message out. And it is incumbent on the news media to try to cover these minor party candidates up to a certain point, but that's not where the heat is. That's not where the focus is. And the media is attracted to the heat, and the heat is in the Romney Obama race.
I get almost every year I have students that, you know, crave a third party. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's by the end of the year, in the middle of the summer, you come up in emails back and forth. I don't think there's an answer to this question other than to say probably the best source of information about the candidates. I mean, I hope they're good enough to have a website. And, you know, if you want to learn about issues from another person's perspective, go to their website and look at that and don't have it be distorted by the media.
This question comes from Bill. He says, I'd like to hear honest opinions from the guests on why the news media have become so completely cowed as to not aggressively call out the politicians when they blatantly and clearly, knowingly lie, not mistakes, not inadvertent false statements, but flat-out, bald-faced lies.
Well, I'm not sure that's true. I mean, I've seen plenty of news coverage that is examined in great detail things that both President Obama and Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan and Joe Biden have said. There are things like PolitiFact, which take campaign claims and examine them in great detail and rate them from, you know, lies to truth. It's out there, and the media is doing it, as far as I can see.
Although I would say, you know, the media, for a variety of reasons, has allowed itself, and we're certainly making some generalities here, but has allowed itself to be characterized politically in a way for a period of our history that the media really tried to stay away from. So we now have networks and newspapers and radio shows that openly call themselves more liberal or more conservative. For those who don't remember, and before all of us were born, the media used to operate in a very similar fashion. If you wanted a conservative newspaper, it was well identified which newspaper you read. Same with a liberal newspaper. So, you know, we went from that period of time in the 1800s and the early 1900s to a more objective standard that the media was really trying to reinforce. But we've certainly shifted again now to a time that was maybe a little more like what we'd had in the past. And that creates some problems for viewers, listeners, etc. And the problem it creates is that if you are consuming media with an interest in listening to things that resonate with you, so you're a conservative choosing conservative talk or something like that, they're going to be less likely to call out conservative candidates. Same goes for the liberal stations or the liberal media news outlets. So it creates a real interesting problem where we have people that are consuming news now looking for a particular bent often. And yet they're also unhappy because people are saying things and they can really resonate that, well, that may not have exactly been true, but there wasn't a whole lot of reason for example, a conservative news media to call out conservative politicians.
Gene?
Oh, I was just going to... I'm afraid I'm taking this down the hill, but, you know, the process has been dumbed down. You know, you have to learn to talk in 30-second sound bites or shorter than that. And
except on public radio.
That's exactly right.
Exactly.
Right.
That's
yeah. So I think go ahead, Howard.
Well, and the process has speeded up so much, too. I mean, you know, it's this 24-hour news cycle, and reporters and editors and news directors are racing to keep up with this. So it's much more difficult to track and to verify.
And to build a case on an issue takes time, and time is the coin of the realm in the media.
Moving away from this just a little bit, we've talked a lot about the presidential race. There's another very big, very contested race in Ohio for the U.S. Senate between incumbent Sherrod Brown, the Democrat, and challenger Josh Mandel. He's the Republican and is the state auditor. No, that's
state
wrong.
Treasurer.
State treasurer. Sorry about that. Right. State treasurer. Mm-hmm. Talk about that race. It's gotten kind of ugly.
Yes, it has gotten kind of ugly. Last week in Charlotte, I mean, Democrats, Ohio Democrats, were just scratching their heads over why this is such a close race. And, you know, part of it, I think, is the fact that Mandel's side has had the help of a whole lot of super PAC money, something up to $16 million being spent in Ohio, influencing Ohio voters and trying to tear down Sherrod Brown. And it seems to be working, and it's made this into a very close race. What, on the surface of it, probably shouldn't be that close a race. But the only thing that I can think of is the super PAC money that's been attacking Brown has cut into his support and lost support for him.
Eric may have some numbers on it, and I think that's probably the most important thing. But I think one of the things that Mandel did early was he just created enough of a sense of vulnerability in the incumbent that the money came pouring in. I mean, that money is smart money. You know, they put it behind people that they think it's going to pay off. And then once the money comes in, it just increases the possibility, and it just ramped the whole thing up in that regard.
Yeah, and incumbency is very important in Ohio, as it is anywhere, but I think as we've learned over the last few Senate cycles, it isn't everything, and you can't guarantee that you're going to win on it alone. One of the difficulties Brown has had is sort of finding a place statewide on an issue position or a policy position that resonates across the state. He's been very good in the more Democratic circles, but not seen on very many policy issues as even reaching out to more moderates. And that, in certain parts of the state, could be a real problem for him. Not so much that necessarily even that Mandel had a strong alternative out there, but simply that Brown wasn't able to get his message and also the job he had been doing in Washington to a big segment of the electorate.
I do want to get to another question here. This also from Bill, who says, specific to Ohio, and Howard, you've sort of addressed this, are there any good estimates on funds coming in from out of state in the Senate race as well as the presidential race? I mean, is it all just, is it a lot of out-of-state money?
Oh, yes. I mean, absolutely. There's going to be tons of, you know, millions and millions of dollars spent by super PACs, by other organizations on both sides in Ohio. I mean, it's hard to say at this point what the total is going to be when you talk about presidential and the Senate campaign, but it's going to be record-breaking.
And the more that comes in, the more that comes in. I mean, it's like right. being able to vote itself, and being yeah. able to bet in the middle of a horse race. You know, if you can right. pick the horse that's out in front, you put money on them, boy.
Well, and just speaking as we were about the evolution of these things and that it's these elections happen and evolve over time. Remember, it wasn't that long ago when it was a bad word to ever utter that you were taking out-of-state money right. into a state race.
Yeah.
And now you can't survive without it.
Now candidates go out and hold big fundraisers in other states, and nobody blinks an eye.
We're running out of time. A couple things I want to get to. We've had numerous questions from folks who want to know about registering to vote and all sorts of information, and I'm going to ask you to go to the Board of Elections website, or if you're in Kentucky, to the county clerk's website to check that out. I just don't have time to get it now, but we'll try to do some news stories on that in the coming weeks to get you some information on that. Just can't get to that all now. We've talked only about two races, a couple other big things going on. This question from Ricky, what are the panel's thoughts on the proposed issue of four-year terms for Cincinnati Council, pros and cons?
In any ballot issue, I've always maintained that part of the possibility of it passing or not depends on the first couple lines on the ballot. And I'll be honest with you, I have not seen what it says in that first sentence or first couple of sentences, but I think people will go in. This is below the radar. I mean, it's impressive that your listener has called in about it. There's no visible campaign to educate voters. The money's all being sucked out by other sources. So I don't know that any of us could predict.
If people don't know, they tend to vote no.
Exactly. That's just what I was going to say. If there's any doubt, they either skip it or they right. vote no.
Yeah.
What about the redistricting vote, issue two, a statewide vote in Ohio?
Welcome to the confusion.
Yeah.
I mean, this is an issue. The Supreme Court now has sent everything back to the Secretary of State and the ballot board. You have two problems. One, you had a very confusing issue to read right. in the first place. Now you've got real confusion about what and how it's going to appear on the ballot. So I think right now we don't even know for sure what's going to be there.
So we'll just have to wait and see.
Unfortunately, yes.
It's a ballot that at the top, it might be a real easy vote because you get so much press on it. But if you're a conscientious voter, you have to go down and read these issues and then make up your mind.
We're going to have you all back before the election is over, which is great news because we're out of time. And we could go on for another half an hour without any trouble. Thank you all for being here. Really appreciate
thank
it.
You.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to Impact Cincinnati on 91.7 WVXU. My guest today was Xavier University Assistant Director for Philosophy, Politics, and the Public Honors, Jean Beaupre, UC Professor and Co-Director of the Institute for Policy Research, Eric Rademacher, and WVXU's political reporter, Howard Wilkinson. Archives of our programs are available on our website, wvxu.org. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier.